to season 4 of the podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. If you've never listened to my podcast before, then welcome to you, and please hit that subscribe button. It's hugely beneficial to us podcasters. As many of you know, I wrote my autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking called Custom Justice, but if you didn't know, you do now. Keeping in line with that, this entire season has been focused on interviewing other people who did or plan to write about their own experiences as trauma survivors and how they overcame their past. As much as we all hate commercials, they are a necessary evil these days. That's what keeps the show on the air. You can also show support by purchasing one of my many books, or donating through PayPal, or leaving a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. You can find the links for the books or donation options in the podcast description, of course, as well as the links to the guest. As of always, a portion of the proceeds from this podcast do go to local organizations that help fight human trafficking. Hey folks, welcome back to the show. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. I have an incredible guest with me today who is literally inspiring millions of people around the world. She is amazing. I'm going to have her share her story with you. Holly Francis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda.
When you first wanted to, when you first reached out to me and said that you wanted to be on my podcast, it just, oh my gosh, I was so excited because you have this incredible story that literally is inspiring people. Let's start at the very beginning. And the very beginning of you starts where? Where are you originally from?
I am originally from a small town, Drayton Valley, in Alberta, Canada. And now I live in a small town just kind of outside of Edmonton, Alberta. And yeah, I've been here kind of ever since, living life.
Nice.
Doing my thing.
I love small towns. There's something so special about them. And you are, of course, a mom, which is super exciting and a wonderful time for anybody. But you had some medical stuff come up after your daughter was born.
I did, and it was very unexpected, not planned. I was completely healthy, and then suddenly, very suddenly, my life changed forever. So if you want, what I can do is just kind of walk you through what happened.
Yes, please. And if you wouldn't mind, when you get to the part about what your diagnosis was, if you can tell us what that means, because a lot of people wouldn't know unless they were told.
Absolutely. So like I said, this would have been 12 years ago. And so I was I had just given birth to my daughter, and I had a wonderful pregnancy, was very excited about being a new mom, and was just really looking forward to, you know, my future. And we had all these plans. We were going to go, you know, shopping with my friends and put my daughter in her stroller. We were going to go for walks. We were going to have play dates. We just had everything all planned out in my mind. And I had a pretty successful birth. She was having a little bit of struggle coming out. And so I had a C-section, but otherwise she was completely healthy and I was doing well. And we went home and we were recovering at home and we were doing well. And I was adjusting to, you know, the late nights and the middle of the night feedings and stuff like that. So it was an adjustment for sure. And life was busy, but I was loving it. And I was just so happy. It was probably the happiest I'd ever felt in my life. And I had wanted to be a mom since I was like 3 years old. So it felt like everything was finally coming together. But then very suddenly my life changed and it felt like it was in the blink of an eye. It happened very, very quickly. And it started with an odd tingle in my finger. And so I remember at the time thinking I must have burnt myself on something, but brushed it off because I couldn't remember burning myself on the stove or anything. But then a couple of hours later, I had this odd pain in my neck. And I at first thought, you know, I slept funny, or maybe I pinched a nerve or something. Like it was very sudden and very, very severe. Tried to ignore it. But then within a couple of hours after that, I was having a hard time kind of walking around and I was feeling extra tired and extra drained, almost like, you know, when you're getting the flu and you're kind of feeling achy and tired. So at first I thought I must be getting the flu, but at the same time I had this severe pain in my neck. And I remember walking up the stairs that night and trying to lift my legs and it just felt abnormally hard. And then I was like, you know what? I just had a C-section. I just had a baby. I'm just recovering. I'll be fine. I just need a really good night's sleep. So I just ignored it. But unfortunately, the pain just progressed and it was so severe that I was in tears. I ended up going to a Medi Center. At the Medi Center, the doctor told me, yeah, I think you actually do have a pinched nerve. And he sent me home. So I went back home, and by this time, I mean, I'm taking pain medication. Nothing is helping. The weakness in my legs is getting worse. The pain in my neck is getting worse. I'm not getting any better. So I put my daughter to bed, and I basically sat on the floor, and I was doing all these stretches, thinking, you know, I just have a really, really severe pinched nerve, and I just need to stretch it out. So I was doing that for several hours in tears, just almost unbearable pain. And in the middle of the night, about 3 in the morning, my daughter Casey woke up because she had to nurse. And I stood from the floor, and my legs completely gave out on me. And I basically could no longer stand anymore. So it was at that point that I knew that it was either a very severe pinched nerve or it was something else. And I had my ex-husband drop me off at the hospital. My daughter obviously was a newborn. I didn't want her to come to the hospital. So I just had him drop me off, told him, you know, just pick me up in a couple of hours. I'm sure I just need to see a doctor, get some medication, and then I'll be able to come home. But unfortunately, I had no idea that that was actually the last time that I would step outside of a hospital for many, many months.
Wow.
Yes, it came on very, very suddenly. So within actually 72 hours of that very first symptom of that tingle, to eventually going into the hospital, seeing a doctor, showing them what was going on. I was very fortunate that the doctor that I seen, he was very honest, and he said, I don't know what's wrong with you. I don't know what's happening. Something is wrong. Something's happening very, very quickly. I'm going to get a doctor to come see you." And a neurologist came down, and he recognized what it was. And that's when I was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So what GBS is, and it's something that majority of people had never heard, have never heard of. I myself had never heard of it. When he said it, I couldn't even pronounce it at the time for many, many months. And basically what it is it's an autoimmune disorder. So it's very similar to multiple sclerosis. In MS will affect the spinal cord and the brain. And with GBS, very similar, that it affects the peripheral nerves in your body. So all of the nerves outside of your spine and your brain. And so what it basically GBS is it's an attack from your immune system onto your own body, so on my peripheral nerves. So whatever kind of trigger that, typically it's a trigger that will happen 2 to 4 weeks prior to GBS coming on, as it'll trigger your autoimmune response, and your autoimmune will say, you know, we see some sort of trigger, we need to fight, and then the problem lies within our own bodies, and it begins to attack our own bodies, and so it attacks the peripheral nerves, causing weakness, potentially paralysis. I had a very, very severe case, and within, like I said, within 72 hours of that first symptom, I was completely paralyzed from the neck down, rushed to ICU, put on a ventilator, basically could no longer breathe on my own, and was in ICU on my deathbed.
Oh my word. Absolutely terrifying. Here you are, a brand new mom, and now you're getting told that you've got this thing that you can't pronounce. GBS, we're just going to call it because that's much easier. This had to absolutely be terrifying to the rest of your family.
It was, and so, I mean, especially because they'd never heard of it either. And turns out it's a lot more common than you realize. It affects about 2 out of every 100,000 people. So I mean, very rare, but at the same time, still affects a large number of people in every city every year. And it was just so traumatic, and it was so sudden. And like you said, I was healthy 1 minute, and then in the hospital fighting for my life, and I was dealing with all these different health issues. So I mean, my blood pressure was extremely high, very dangerously high, my heart rate, and there were times that they weren't sure that I would survive. So it was very, very traumatic for us. And then for me, I was fully coherent, fully aware, even though I was completely paralyzed. I couldn't move my body at all. I couldn't communicate because it was a ventilator basically shoved down my throat. But I was still awake and I still knew what was happening and I was fully aware of my situation. And so I knew that, I went from being a brand new mom and being excited about my life to suddenly having no idea if I was even going to make it another hour or another day.
Oh, my worst. That's just, oh, I can't even imagine. I was diagnosed with a autoimmune disease back in 2015. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. It is not something that's going to make me feel paralyzed at any point in my life. I thought that was the end of my world.
There's autoimmune. It's wild that I've learned so much more about autoimmunes and just how wild it is that, our own bodies just don't know why, but they just attack themselves. And it's heartbreaking, no matter what it is, no matter whether it's you're going through something really severe like mine, or whether you're going through something rare, when it, or I mean, less severe or mild. I think it's still scary when you have no idea what your health is going to be look like. You don't know what your future looks like. And so I went through a very, very dark time. There was no signs of improvement for many, many weeks. Like I just laid paralyzed and life went on for the rest of my family. I mean, they had to continue raising my daughter. And so I was very fortunate that they brought her to be with me every day. They would put her on my chest and make sure that we'd bond. And it was bittersweet because like some days I was so thankful that she was there and that I could bond with her and I could be with her. But at the same time, it was heartbreaking because I wanted to be at home with her. And my entire family was bottle feeding her and changing her diaper in front of me. And I couldn't do any of those things. I had to stop breastfeeding because of all the medication I was on. And it was devastating. And it broke my heart that I couldn't even reach out and touch her. I mean, she was reaching out and touching my fingertips, and she would stare at me. And I just couldn't do anything. And I was very lost and broken for a very long time because I didn't believe that I was ever going to get out of there. I didn't believe that I was ever going to get back to being a mom to her. And I felt robbed. I felt like everything that I was looking forward to in my life had been stripped away from me in a second.
So at what point did that change?
So there was various times along the way, and the most profound moment was when another GBS survivor came to visit me. So I was obviously feeling very alone. The doctors were saying, you have this rare disease. Many of the nurses and doctors had never even seen a case before in their whole careers. And so that was very isolating for me. I felt like just like this alien. I felt like one of the only people in the world fighting this disease that no one could possibly understand what it was like to go through. And everyone kept telling me, you're so strong, Holly. You're going to get through this. You can do this. And I didn't feel strong. I at times I was struggling with my mental health, my physical health. I was my pain, the pain in my neck was so severe. I was on so many narcotics and just completely out of it, and just didn't have much will to keep fighting. Even though I had my daughter there trying to motivate me, I just didn't have it in me. And so I felt ashamed that I wasn't being this strong person and that I didn't actually want to fight the way that they wanted me to. And my doctors and nurses saw that in me. They saw that I was losing hope. And so they reached out to another GBS survivor. One of the doctors had actually had him as a patient a couple years prior. And crazy enough, not only was he in the same hospital I was, he was actually in the same room and had spent many months there.
Oh.
And he had actually recovered completely. So they called him and he came to my hospital room and he walked in and he came with his family. He had young daughters. And he said, I've been where you have and I recovered and you can too. And I think that was the first moment that I actually believed that, you know what, there's someone else out there that went through what I have. And if he can do it, then just maybe I can too. And that's really what kind of pushed me forward to believing it and, just trying again.
Yeah, I had that moment. I went to an anti-tracking conference where I saw other survivors on stage talking about having fully recovered from their past and moving on to have healthy and worthwhile relationships. And I was struggling with that.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't matter whether it's GBS or Crohn's or an illness or any kind of struggle that you're going through in life. We tend to just feel so alone when we're going through our struggles. But there are people that, you know, maybe don't know exactly what you're feeling, but may have a similar experience or have gone through a similar experience. And I always strongly encourage, you know, don't isolate yourself. Try to find someone else that's either been through it or has already, you know, conquered that mountain, just to either give you some support or some inspiration to keep going, and just that proof that, you know, you can get there too.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason the support groups exist in the first place, right? It's because they actually do some good.
Yeah. And I mean, it's unfortunate because you see those, like, I just remember as a child, even watching like movies with the support group and they've got the people in the middle and it's like, hi, my name is Holly and I have GBS. And it's like, you're like, you just think that it's not as amazing as it actually is. But when you find another person who's gone through what you have and who understands, it's just, it's like meeting family that you just never even knew you had.
That's so cool. That's exactly the way I feel. Yeah. So how has all of this impacted your life today?
Well, it changed my life in every way possible. So basically, as I recovered, over time, I did get better. And it took many, many weeks. I first had to learn how to breathe on my own off the ventilator. And when I was going through that, that was a challenge in itself. I at times I didn't believe that I was going to be able to do it on my own. I had to last over 72 hours without the ventilator. And I remember lasting like 30 seconds and then hyperventilating and crying because it was so challenging. I felt like I couldn't breathe. I felt like I was underwater. And that GBS patient, he actually had brought me a sign at one point in my recovery that said, it's so amazing. It says, courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes it's the voice at day's end saying, I will try again tomorrow. And he had taped that in front of my wall, or in front of me on my wall in the hospital. And I remember just staring at it and just promising myself, you know, I can just keep trying and I don't have to feel strong to keep trying. I can do it with tears in my eyes and I can just promise myself to keep moving forward. And there was still through the entire process, there were so many moments that I didn't really believe that I was going to be able to get off the ventilator. And I didn't know what my future looked like. Was I ever going to get out of ICU? Was I going to be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life? Was I ever going to be able to take care of my daughter? I really didn't know. But I promised myself that I would just keep trying. And so that's what I did. And once I got off the ventilator, then obviously I was moved out of ICU. I started physiotherapy and basically had to learn how to do everything again. So I had to re-strengthen my body, how to hold cutlery and how to feed myself. I eventually was strong enough to, you know, hold my daughter in my arms and how to hold her bottle and feed her, take care of myself and how to brush my teeth and brush my hair. Strengthen my legs so that I could start to stand, and then worked very hard in physiotherapy and had to learn how to walk again, first with a cane first with a walker, then a cane, and then eventually on my own. So every step of the way, there were so many times that I didn't know that if I was going to be able to get through this, but I just kept promising myself that I would try again because of that sign. And so that has changed my life in such a profound way, because I've now go after anything I want, because I say, you know what, I can at least try. I don't know. I still have that fear. Is this going to work out? I don't know, but I have to at least try. And I think we as human beings, like, we just don't realize that we are so much stronger and capable than we give ourselves credit. And I think my story has just shown me time and time again, our bodies are incredible and we can overcome hard things. We just have to try.
Wow. That is beautiful. And I know that you have videos, recovery videos that are inspiring people.
I do. So at the time, my mom had a video camera. This was back in the day. This was right before iPhones came out. And she had a video camera, and she was videoing me in the hospital, partially because she wanted to show that, you know, on the hard days that I was getting better, even though I didn't necessarily believe it. There were signs of recovery. So she wanted me to see those. And then the other part of it was that that other GBS survivor had videoed his journey, his family, and they had put it all together. And so my mom thought that that was just something that I would want to have. And I remember at the time being livid with my mom because I didn't want a video camera, you know, videoing me in my most vulnerable moments. But looking back, it was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because after that, I was able to look back, see how far I've come, be able to remind myself of everything that I went through. There's so many different events that we experienced in the hospital, from, you know, struggling with having to breathe. I was dealing with a lot of nausea and vomiting and stuff. And so it's just this good reminder of what I've overcome. And then from there, I was able to put together a video, and I wanted to show other people, you know, what it's like to go through GBS. After I had recovered from Guillain-Barré and was telling people about it, you know, I'm better now and I'm healthy again and I'm living my life with my daughter and life is good. It was so hard to explain, you know, I went through 126 days in the hospital and over 70 of those in ICU. And it was very hard to explain that in one conversation. And so that's where the videos came in. And I was able to make a YouTube video. And, you know, I just wanted to bring awareness to what GBS is and what it can do to somebody. And I was very, very lucky that those videos went viral and ended up reaching all around the world. And through those videos, I've been able to meet hundreds of thousands of other GBS survivors that I didn't even know existed out there that, you know, have just thanked me for sharing my story and for bringing awareness and for helping them. You know, sometimes they've had, it's family members who somebody's been diagnosed with GBS and they're in that state of fear, not knowing if their family members will survive. So I've been able to give them hope and I've been able to educate doctors. And so it's crazy to think, but after everything that I went through, I truly believe that everything happened for a reason and it brought me exactly where I was meant to be in my life.
You're literally saving lives.
Yeah. and educating so many doctors. I've had the privilege of now obviously writing my book and getting that out into the world. And there's still so much that doctors and nurses don't quite understand about GBS or what it's like to care for somebody going through it. I mean, I dealt with severe, severe nerve pain, which is like your body being on fire, as if you like fell off a roof. And doctors and nurses didn't understand that. And so through my book, I've been able to really articulate what it was like to be in ICU for that long and what it was like to be a patient in the hospital and just all the experiences that I went through. And I think it's been really eye-opening for many medical professionals to understand.
You know, it's a lot of times that's so helpful to other people too. They can actually take your words into a doctor and say, look, this is what I'm feeling.
Exactly.
Through, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And if people wanted to grab a copy of your book, I know you've got a website. Is it available on your website?
The website will bring you to kind of a whole bunch of different places, whether that be Amazon or Barnes and Nobles or Chapters or Indigo, that sort of thing. Obviously, the Amazon is the easiest way to get it. So it is out on ebook and on paperback, and the audiobook is coming out probably within about a month or so.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
So your website is www.hollyaftergbs.com, so people can find all the different links on where they can grab it. And I'm going to make sure I put that in the show notes too, as well as your Facebook, your Instagram, your YouTube, and your TikTok. But for people that are already curious about your YouTube channel, that's youtube.com/hollyaftergbs. I would highly suggest people go there and check it out. It's such inspirational footage. They're just absolutely amazing. You've come so far.
Yeah, it's still wild to me to even look back on and just think where I was at one point. And I think it's just a good reminder of, you know, even when you're at your darkest, and you truly don't believe that you're going to make it through, I think my story is like a powerful reminder that you can come out of the worst of times and come out on the other side and come out stronger than ever.
Absolutely. Who inspires you the most?
My daughter. She's definitely my inspiration. I can't even imagine had I gone through that without her. As awful as it was that I lost out on the first basically 6 months of her life. By the time I got home, she was, like a 6 month old. And I missed out on, like I said, breastfeeding and taking her on her first walk and seeing her first smile. But now, I mean, it gave me such an appreciation for being a mom that I'm not sure I would have had I not gone through that. And when I was in ICU, every time I would look at her, she was just my motivation to get better. And I don't know if I would have had that if she wasn't there, because it was just, I didn't feel like I had anything to live for other than her. And so she's still to this day, I mean, she's 12 years old now, she's all grown up and she's taller than me and it's crazy. And and it's like, you know, everything just made everything better for us, and it's strengthened our bond. And she's definitely my inspiration and my motivation to always keep going and always keep fighting.
That is amazing. I love that. She's 12 and she's taller than you. That's hilarious.
It's wild. I know.
Is her dad really tall?
He is. Yes. Yeah. We knew that when she was born. When she was born, they were like, she is very, very long baby.
Now, would you consider yourself to be an introvert or an extrovert? And do you feel like that has changed?
In some ways, yes. So I've always been an introvert. After I went through this, I felt like it kind of gave me purpose in my life. So prior to that, I mean, I worked in human resources and I still do to this day. But I didn't really, you know, have this passion for life. I really didn't know kind of what I loved doing. And after going through this experience, it became very clear to me that this was my passion, that I wanted to bring awareness to GBS. I wanted to inspire others with my story and help them through their own struggles. So I started basically volunteering, and then later joined the GBS Foundation here in Canada as a board member. And it's become just my life mission to just help educate others about GBS and help others. I go to the hospitals and visit other patients the way that patient did for me. And I've connected with people all over the world and just given them advice and answered questions and just helped them through their own journey. So it has kind of changed me into an extrovert in that way that, you know, I love sharing my story and I love talking with other people about it. And I definitely see it as such a positive in my life.
Well, that's cool. That's very cool. How do you celebrate your wins in life?
With my family, I also really celebrate through the gym. So after I went through everything, I really discovered, you know, our bodies are incredible. To go from completely paralyzed to back to being able to do everything that I did before, I saw how amazing my body was. So I started to get into exercise, and I got into the best shape of my life. And that's one thing that has really made such a difference in my life, both physically and mentally. And so it's something that I share and talk about all the time, that it's a great way to, you know, lift your spirits up, to get those endorphins, and to just celebrate your body, because there's so many people out there, you know, like me, that were paralyzed at one point, couldn't move their body, and they would if they could.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to have a sign on my mirror that said, I hate running, but I do it for those who can't.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. I met so many people in the rehab hospital that I was at that had spinal cord injuries. And that's been a huge motivator to me to, you know, exercise because I can.
Do you happen to have a copy of your book handy? Would you be open to doing a quick reading for us?
All right. So I'm going to read the very beginning of my book. It's just when I had woken up on life support in ICU. So I will start. So I woke up on life support with a plastic tube down my throat. I was coherent enough to know where I was, but sedated enough that I thought I was in a dream. Then horrible pain in my neck resurfaced, and the flashbacks of the last few days brought me back to my reality. I gasped for air once, then twice, unable to take in a full breath. A machine beside me beeped in a sing-song tone. A slight pressure of air in my chest forced its way through my lungs. The breath gave me a sense of relief, but why was it 100 degrees in my room? My skin burned in an intense, tingling, half-asleep, pins and needles sort of way. I gasped for air again, and more beeps followed. The room was dim, the lights above me were off, but the morning sunshine peeked through the blinds of the frost-covered window to my right. Beside my bed sat my crying husband, our newborn baby in his arms. Mom and Dad were in the corner whispering. I tried to call out to them, but the tube in my mouth made it impossible. No one realized I was awake. Barely able to catch my breath, I gasped again, wondering if it were the last breath I'd take. I can't breathe. My heart raced and I struggled for air. I'm dying, but no one noticed me. I wanted to scream. Another gasp, more beeping from the machine. My husband stood from his seat. My mother rushed to the head of my bed. The machine beeped again and more air was forced through my chest. Mom, I tried to say. She leaned in close to my face. I didn't make a sound, but I could move my lips, even with the tube coming out of my mouth. Holly, you're going to be okay, she whispered, her eyes wide with worry. My gaze moved to my husband. His cheeks were soaked with tears, his green eyes bloodshot. Our baby girl stared at me, innocently unaware of the situation. My dad stayed silent. His eyes were puffy and red. How can this be happening? I'm a good person. I don't deserve this. I shook my head in disbelief that I was dying so soon after the birth of my child. Tears trickled down my face. Mom, I mouthed again. She leaned in closer. Just let me go, I tried to say. My mother's eyes widened. No, you're going to get better, she insisted. James took my hand in his. The doctor said you're going to get through this, Holly. His voice cracked through tears. I shook my head. I was in the ICU on life support, unable to breathe, barely able to move my own body. They were lying to me. I'm not getting out of this. They need to let me go and we need to say goodbye. I was terrified but ready. Mom, I calmly mouthed again, closing my eyes. Just let me go. I'm ready to go. In this moment of surrender, I believed it was the end. In reality, my nightmare was just beginning. I had no idea how much worse things would get, but I would soon find out that I was a fighter, and on this journey, I would find my strength.
Hmm. Wow. I think there's so many people that can really can identify with that. Thinking that this is your last moment, you're ready.
Yeah, just not believing that things can ever get better.
Yeah,
but it can, and there's always room for hope.
Yeah, I encourage people to go out and get this book. This is, I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes, and that doesn't happen very often. that was amazing. It was beautifully written, and absolutely devastating.
It was, but it was it's a happy ending.
Yes, absolutely. You're still here. That's definitely a happy ending.
I am.
And you have a 12-year-old daughter.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Wow. You've come such a long way. So there's always one more question that I ask people before I let them go. And it's always my favorite episode or my favorite question of the whole episode, because every answer is different. And every answer can be different based on what day of the week I'm talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So what is one thing that you love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
I would say my tenacity to never give up. And I definitely bring it back to that courage doesn't always roar quote. And I literally took that quote and put it on my wall in my office. And throughout my entire journey of writing my book, I mean, that was a struggle in itself. Took me many, many years of writing and editing and publishing and a lot of hard work. And there was times that I wanted to give up, but it would always go back to that courage doesn't always roar. And so I think it's just really just that adversity that I've gained and realizing that I'm so much stronger than I give myself credit for, and just always promising myself I'll try again tomorrow, which I do. And I think I've been able to reach so many goals along the way because of that.
If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please make sure you check out the episode description. There you'll find links on how you can learn more about this guest, links to connect with them on social media, and how to support the podcast. Remember, I don't get paid to do this. My boss is a bit tight-fisted. I can say that. I work for myself. In short, this show really is all about the guest. If you've enjoyed their interview, please feel free to let them know. You can also tune in to my other podcast, Growth from Darkness, which is co-hosted by a lovely lady from Australia. We talk about what trauma responses are and healthy ways to move beyond the past. For more information, just go to growthfromdarkness.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/growthfromdarkness.